RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Yesterday morning, there was a Tauranga City Council meeting, an ordinary council meeting on the agenda, fluoridation of Tauranga City's water supply. There were some public speakers, maybe 200 people. One of the speakers, keynote speaker, in fact, Jodie Brunning. She's back here on RCR. Jodie, it's the day after. Can you take us in the room, Jodie? What was it like?
Oh, Paul, thanks for inviting me on. That room was so full, they had to ask people to move into the foyer and watch the presentation on their phones.
Okay. So do you think that was a surprise to some of them?
I have no doubt that that was a surprise. Absolutely not. You know, the report mentioned that, Hastings Council, they were fined, they were fined for paying, for a special interest group. This is not a special interest group. You know, there was babies, there was every age group in the room. People were sitting on the floor. There weren't enough chairs. And they had to move out of the room, ironically, for health and safety reasons.
Okay, there you go. How do we explain such a turnout? I guess I can work out that, that there's a building opposition. People are more aware now. But that kind of stuns me, actually, that there was such a turnout. And this is actually going the other way now, our way, let's say.
Look, I think people have realised what happened to Tauranga with the commissioners in place. I presented on fluoride to the commissioners and I watched the utter disinterest and the utter inability to engage by the commissioners. And so what we saw, the discussion between the councillors after our presentations, was so much more informed, was so much more willing to tackle, because essentially what we're talking, the nub of what most of us are talking about here is the uncertainty of children under 8, a lowered IQ from exposures to fluoride, and the issue that under 1 milligram a litre will potentially harm children if that is in the water and they also have other exposures such as to toothpaste. So this is what's called a values-based decision, and that's what the precautionary approach invites us to think about risk and what that might mean in terms of what's happening in front of them. So our elected representatives and our management inside our councils have to be willing to talk about actual values. How are we going to, who are we going to protect in this instance? And what is the most important thing here?
Yeah, that initial response from the commissioners, thinking back to that, how do you explain that lack of interest? I'm always curious about this question because anything to do with health, but particularly as it affects very young children and their start in life. And given that the information that we've been talking about here, mainly from the United States, has been well known for quite some while, there's not much of an excuse to be that ignorant is what I'm thinking. So have you thought about how you were received then compared to now?
Well, I don't believe I consider that the commissioners are acting under the instructions of central government. And the commissioners are unable or unwilling to consider information that may contradict central government. And those commissioners lived through COVID. They've made lots of decisions that have had nothing to do with the health and safety of young children. And young children haven't been a priority of that previous government.
Who said what at the meeting yesterday? I mean, what did you say?
Okay, so we had Robert Coe. He spoke first and he talked about occupational health and safety because there is a risk of handling fluoride, handling hydroxyfluorosilicic acid, and also it's a risk that happens over time because this product is so corrosive. So he's concerned about the long-term safety of the workers, and he's also aware that there are histories of misdosing, and I brought up the recognition by the water services that we have have actually the maximum acceptable values have been exceeded in the past. So the issue of misdosing that he was particularly concerned about was where this will impact. If someone's on a dialysis machine, they simply can't handle the toxicity of fluoride. Yeah. So he discussed that. Then we had Alana Ratner, Dr. Alana Ratner, medical doctor, coming in. And so she was talking about lead and, well, no, she was talking about fluoride, but she introduced her discussion to talk about the fact that lead was banned overseas in 1972, but New Zealand couldn't ban lead until 1996. It took New Zealand 24 years to do the right thing. And so the US National Toxicology Report said that 0.7 milligrams per litre is likely to be lowering the IQ of some children because, of course, the scientists, the toxicologists in this independent and impartial report were considering that there is this risk of cumulative exposures from toothpaste as well as fluoride. So she was looking at that, and she also drew attention to the fact that this evidence, this scientific work on toxicity and neurodevelopmental and cognitive harm is not going away. So a 2024 study she talked about in LA found that the higher that the pregnant mothers were in their exposures to fluoride, they had double the odds of children having neurodevelopmental disorders. And she also brought attention, which is very well known, to the problem of baby formula, because breast milk is quite magical in that mothers will naturally screen out a lot of the toxicants. So breast milk is famous for being lower in toxicity than sort of environmental exposures. And so children on formula won't have that same protection, and instead they will be drinking fluoridated water. Now, there's an interesting thing with this Tauranga City Council is they're saying, oh, well, we're going to provide a water source that is not fluoridated.
Oh, yeah, how?
We're going to look at that cost of doing that. And so, you know, I'm imagining all the mums that are on public transport in all the corners of the Bay of Plenty with no cars driving to this one destination to get their fluoride-free. Oh, it's just.
I've seen that in Wellington. There's a
ludicrous.
There's a pump in Petone where people travel 20, 30 k's to.
Yes.
To fill up their water. And yes. Yeah, I can imagine that.
Yeah. Yeah. And so an alternative option, Paul, this is just a side, was, well, what if the local council could spend peanuts stocking in kindergartens, primary schools and secondary schools, those little fluoride tablets, if parents really wanted them, they could reverse that out, that kind of concept out, and then they could supply the schools with that and just have non-fluoridated water. Because one of the things we don't talk about is the fact that this is the entire drinking water supply. When we municipal supply, it's not just drinking water. Drinking water's not stuck over there in a corner.
No, that's right. Yeah.
And, yeah, so I was the third speaker, and I talked about the fact that what really hasn't been evident in a lot of the conversations, and indeed in none of the legacy media, is the fact that that every time the Director General of Health or the government turn to their key references, the first one is the 2014 Gluckman review, the second one is the 2021 revision of the Gluckman review, both of these by the Office of the Prime Minister, as chief science advisor, and then the third one is the Cochrane fluorosis study. So the Cochrane fluorosis study that looked at fluorosis did not consider neurocognitive or IQ delay. That was outside the scope of the Cochrane study. Now, the two Department of Prime Minister and Cabinet, so they're within a political department, unlike, for example, the National Toxicology Program, that 2024 paper that came out just this last week, which is independent and at arm's length of politicians. So what we see with both of the OPM chief science advisor papers is there is no methodology at all. This is not a systematic review of the literature. This is picking studies to put in this review and talk about it. Yeah, and then if you look at the 2021 when that 2021 paper by the OPM CSA was released, that was one day before or after the Supplementary Order Paper 38. So it's not just a political document, it was politically timed.
Gosh, okay.
Yeah. So if we think about proper risk assessment and what proper risk assessment means, that means considering all the risk factors. So risk assessment should be actually looking at arthritis, osteoarthritis, the higher risk of pediatric fractures. It should be looking at neurocognitive developmental delay. It should be looking at other implications like fertility, ADHD. And it should be doing a review of the literature. And yes, some, as we see with NTP pay programs, some studies won't be as trustworthy, so they can be discarded. But this should be done transparently. So the NTP program transparently discarded or down-regulated the studies that weren't as high quality, whereas we haven't seen any of that in New Zealand. There is no risk assessment. So when judges in the courts of law are saying, well, I believe in the Ministry of Health advice, I think the judges have been misled because they think that this is an authoritative tome. And that's one of the things I really emphasised from the start with the counsellors at Tauranga was the fact that, you know, it seems like from, say, Physicians and Scientists for Global Responsibilities, you know, from our perspective, is that the Director General may be misleading officials because, and that this section 116, this tiny little section stuck into the Health Act, may set officials up to fail in their obligation to protect health because it's inconsistent with other pieces of legislation, the Drinking Water Safety, even the Local Government Act. So we believe that we should be asking whether the New Zealand's gold standard for the safety of fluoride shouldn't be established by a politically timed review from the OPM.
With cherry picking.
Exactly. So it should be risk assessment. And to quote someone who I was talking with before, it's not a departure from the science, but being true to science. That's what risk assessment is. It's being true to science.
What about the Bill of Rights Act? BORA, was that talked about?
Well, what was wonderful is us three speakers with our 5 minutes of democracy didn't actually get to that. Okay. And so we were really thrilled to hear a couple of different councillors. Steve Morris brought up BORA, and Steve said we should give the judicial review process time. And I think Glenn Crowther also.
Yep, no, Glenn. Yep.
Yeah, he brought that up as well. And, you know, Steve Morris, kudos to him. He said he's personally happy with fluoridation, but he acknowledges my body, my choice is a really important value. And he also did state in a really lovely way that in the last few years, folks who have had medical directions imposed on them, you know, he's making allowances for the fact that he doesn't really see that continued medicalisation is the wisest choice for the public. So that was really lovely. And Hotapu Baker said, you know, when choice is taken away from community, but he said with regards to fluoridation, we really haven't had the choice to seek insight from community, the idea that they might bring this to wider comment. Mm. So I thought that was really worthy. And it was really interesting because Rick Kurak, who proposed the initial motion to get fluoridation into water as quickly as possible. Look, he emphasised the need to help less fortunate people and the need that, and he sort of asserted that people in the room, they were there because they had the capacity to be in the room and other people might not, and they really need basically to be fluoridated.
Okay.
And sort of he didn't actually acknowledge that there was a lot of the people in the room, from what I could see, weren't actually wealthy or high income.
Yeah, who does he mean? Who does he mean?
He's trying to speak to people without a voice. But I think by the end of it, he was and you know, my insight is that, for example, communities of colour have had medication foisted on them in some of the worst ways. And my knowledge from the scientific literature in New Zealand is that one of our big problems is once people get into the health system, if they are a community, you know, someone who isn't white, they might actually get less, not as good quality medication. And that's actually been recorded in the literature. So being in the health system and not getting quite as good service is very different from being compulsorily medicated and having your choice taken away.
Along with the rest of us, potentially.
Exactly.
Okay. What about the mayor? He's had a few things to say that I've seen up to till this point. Mahi Drysdale. What did he have to say?
Yeah, so he said, and I quote, "We should have a choice. And personally, I don't support water being fluoridated. We do have options." He said, "We have to represent our whole community and the people of Tauranga." He did note there are significant fines. We have to be cognizant, maybe. So he is very aware that the Ministry of Health could take action. But so Rick Kurak's motion failed. So then what happened was another motion. There was a good 15 minutes or so set aside while they redrafted a second motion. Jen Schooler, she moved that, and Mahi Drysdale seconded that. And so I can read out what that motion said if you would like.
Yeah, why don't you? Why don't you?
So the second motion was that the council receives a report fluoridation of Tauranga City's water supply and B, requests the Director General of Health a further extension to defer fluoridation of Tauranga's water supply until such time as a judicial review court process on this matter is completed. Also, that assurance that Tauranga City Council will not be subject to financial penalty should it not proceed to fluoridate the water until such time as a judicial review court process is completed and the consequences understood. C, does not proceed with fluoridation of the water supply until the completion of the judicial review court process, regardless of whether the extension in B1 is granted. D, if the Director General of Health does not provide assurance financial penalty requested in B2 above, that the matter be reported back to the council for further decision. E, if following the judicial review process, councils are required to fluoridate, then Tauranga's water supply will be fluoridated. F, authorises staff to complete further investigation of options to provide a non-fluoridated water supply for those who choose it. G, notes that staff will return to council with a report in December 2024 outlining options for a non-fluoridated water supply for those who choose it. This report will provide information on costs and who pays those costs, risks and feasibility.
Yep. All right.
So remembering that the appeal by the Director of General Health and of all people, the Attorney General, that is set for, I think, June next year. This is 2025.
Okay. Just looking at the fines too, $7 million in the first year and $3.8 million from then on. Talk about being bludgeoned with a sledgehammer.
It really is. And, you know, the councillors, you know, Rick Kurak stated this twice, we're creatures of central government.
Yeah.
So, and the other councillors said we have to work with central government. You know, so they're very aware that, you know, the government might give with one hand and take with the other. I think they're so cautious because they sort of, you know, to quote Sir Geoffrey Palmer, our government is authoritarian in style, and I think they're very aware. But I think they have to keep moving forward, you know, with feet steady and just absolutely.
This is a vote loser.
Thinking about the public interest. Yeah.
You know, politically. So do you want to lose some votes? Bring it on. Okay.
Yeah.
Because that's, in the end, what they pay attention to in Wellington.
Yeah. And I really, if you're looking at national politics. It is absolutely a vote loser. And I have to say, thanks, I haven't met him before, Martin Rosenboom, he emphasised the need for better comms to media, and he emphasised that the media have taken a one-sided approach to this issue that needs to be redressed, including by the journalist that was in the room.
Yeah, we had Martin on, actually, before the about a week before the election. So we know about him too. Thank you, Jody. That was fascinating. It was like being in the room. That's what we wanted.
Thank you, everyone that came along. And honestly, I really do see those mayor and councillors as moving forward with the best will in the world. So I really do believe we have to support them.
Okay. And when do we know what happens next? You might have just told us, but I've already forgotten. Do we know yet what is next? If that's an unknown at the stage, that's fine.
Well,
we'll find
they're
out.
Waiting for decisions on judicial review, but then of course we've got the appeal by the Director General and the Attorney General, and of course, and we have to keep remembering that the Director General of Health has not come back yet with the Bora consideration.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. And I did make one other mention that I really want to say is we have to remember in this section 116, they say fluoride. They do not say hydroxyfluorosilicic acid. Legislation is very technical, Paul.
Yeah, yeah. So let's be accurate, right?
And exactly. And the second point, they say that the only thing the Director General needs to prove is that there will be a reduction in the prevalence of severity in cavities. So what could happen is someone who is on a low income, some teenager with 9 cavities in their teeth, if those cavities are found to have been reduced by 2 cavities and their mouth is still full of inflammation, the Director General can still fluoridate. So you've got that slight hypocrisy, and then you've got an absolute lack in section 116 of even mentioning any obligation on the Director General to assure of the safety. So this is being treated as a medical therapeutic, and the Director General has no obligation as a medical therapeutic to look at the safety. So
that's
this
incredible.
Legislation is terrible. And I know you need to go, but this last point. In 2016, 2017, in 2021, the public had no way to come back and say, this is bad, do not take the power of local councils away from us. And so they were talking in the select committee processes about the risk and the harm. And both select committees said, we will not talk about that because that's beyond the subject matter of the bill.
Yeah.
So the New Zealand people still have not had a chance to talk about the safety and efficacy of this in public fora. And this is why meetings like today are so important, because central government doesn't want to talk about it in select committees.
All right, Jody Brunning, thanks for coming back on.
Thank you, Paul.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.